you're here continues to describe in denunciation, censure in regard to these false teachers, revealing their character, what they are in this respect. And here in verse 15, he presents their culpability and first love. Looking at the Greek, forsaking the right way, they have gone astray. Forsaking is adjectival participle present active of the compound verb kata lipo, K-A-T-A-L-E-I-P-O. It means to leave behind, figuratively forsake or depart from, abandon. What these forsake is the right way. Our adjective right here, accusative feminine singular, is euthus, E-U-T-H-U-S, euthus. It means straight or right. It's used 59 times. Followed with our noun for way or path, road, hodos, H-O-D-O-S. Forsaking the right way, they have gone astray. Have gone astray is the aorist passive indicative of our verb here, planao, P-L-A-N-A-O. Wonder, gone astray. We saw the verb back in 1 Peter in 2:25. The passive here recognizes volition's involvement. And then Peter brings out an example again of the Old Testament of which they emulate, having followed the way of Balaam, the son of Beor. Having followed is your another participle here. We see this listing of adjectival participles throughout this section. Of the verb ex akolutheo, E-X-A-K-O-L-O-U-T-H-E-O, ex akolutheo, to follow or imitate, used three times. Is all three uses are in Peter, 2 Peter 1:16, 2:2, and here in our verse. The way of Balaam. Rather than the right way, they've taken this path. Again, our noun, hados, repeated here in the dative case with the definite article, hey, hados, here of Balaam. The description of the way, the one that they imitate, the proper name here, transliterated with the definite article, ho, Balaam, B-A-L-A-A-M. This name's used three times in the New Testament here, or parallel Jude 11, and in Revelation 2:14. Then he brings out that he is the son of Beor. It's simply of Beor, denoting a genitive of relationship, hence the son of, and the Greek here in the transliteration with the definite article is literally ho, Besor, B-O-S-O-R. Used one time here in the New Testament. Who, reference to Balaam, a relative pronoun hos, H-O-S, loved the wages of unrighteousness. Our verb for love here is our agapao verb, aorist active indicative, A-G-A-P-A-O, followed with our noun for wages or compensation, misthos, M-I-S-T-H-O-S. Saw that earlier in verse 13a. And these wages are of unrighteousness. Our noun, adikia. A-D-I-K-I-A. Dikaios is righteousness. Put the alpha in front of the word, it negates it. Adikia. So we're rereading verse 15 here. Forsaking the right way, they have gone astray, having followed the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved the wages of unrighteousness. All right, for now, this is verse 15. One, Peter continues by explaining why these false teachers especially have such notoriety of being called accursed children. Again, it's important to maintain the thought that Peter is presenting, that these false teachers fall in the category of those who are on the top of God's hit list in regard to false teachers, as verse 10a brought out, especially those who indulge the flesh in emulation of the examples of the Sodomites, etc. And verse 14, he finished that verse by labeling them as accursed children. And now he goes on by explaining why these are especially accursed, even more so than the normal, if you will, unbeliever. So too, in addition to their subversive immorality, what places them in a category unique to their brand of evil is their culpability to the truth. Culpability plays a factor in regards to God's reaction in judgment, etc., to mankind. And just as we understand the issue of culpability in our own lives, of others around us as well as ourselves, so does God. And why these false teachers are held in such low esteem before God as targets of judgment upon them is that these individuals are culpable to the truth in spite of their remaining unbelief as negative individuals. So three, this is the emphasis of the independent clause, forsaking the right way, they have gone astray. For the participle here, forsaking, katalipo, means to leave behind. And it assumes, in all cases, it assumes previous association, whether a place, person, thing, or principle. Example, Matthew 4:13, of leaving behind a place. Jesus, in regards to his ministry, and leaving Nazareth, leaving behind Nazareth where he was at. He came and settled in Capernaum. Of persons, Matthew 16:4. Jesus, dealing with Pharisees who wanted a sign of his Messiahship, and he just gave him doctrine and said, figure it out yourself with the doctrine, basically. And at the end of the verse, and he left them, and he went away. So that involves persons. 19:5. Jesus knew perfectly how to balance at the time of when to give people doctrine and the witness and not cast pearls at the same time. 19:5, in regards to the marriage of husband and wife, for this cause a man shall leave his father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and two shall become one flesh. The divine institution of marriage calls for the new married couple to establish their own home under the authority of the new male who has just taken his bride, and to move out of the house of the parents, get out from under their jurisdiction, and start his own life. So there again, persons are in view. In regards to a thing, Mark 14:52, in regards to Christ's arrest and his disciples being around him, and there's a young man, as we saw in the Gospel of John, we went through the same scenario. He had nothing on but a linen sheet, They grabbed him, but he left a linen sheet behind and escaped naked. He didn't want to be taken into jail. Make a movie about that. That's what I say. Hebrews 4, 1, now that deals with principle in regards to forsaking or abandoning. Hebrews 4, 1, where literally it deals with leaving behind a promise. Therefore, let us fear, that's righteous fear, unless while promise remains, don't leave it behind, of entering his rest, any one of you should seem to have come short of it. So in all cases, it's important to understand this, because this is what points out the culpability grammatically. In all cases, the forsaking involves a previous association. So 5, figuratively, it means to abandon or forsake, as in our verse here with respect to the right way. They abandon or forsake the right way. 6, the adjective right way, euthus podos, means literally straight way, and is a common idiom used metaphorically for sound wisdom, the life that abides by it. We use the same type of idioms, such as referring to someone that they're straight as an arrow. You know, denoting their veracity, their integrity. They can be trusted, things of this nature. And here, straightway is used as an idiom for those for sound Bible doctrine and those who adhere to it. Psalm 5:8. O Lord, lead me in your righteousness because of my foes. Psalm of David and his enemies, make my way straight before me, according to his divine directive, God's divine directive for him, and guarding him and protecting him. And he desires to do God's will in the matter. Proverbs 3:6. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. God will oversee the adjusted positive believer's life and protect them in regards to making decisions that otherwise would be catastrophic to them spiritually and otherwise in their lives. Also 9:15, Proverbs 9:15. Regards to the silly woman, the woman of folly is boisterous. Verse 13, she is naive and knows nothing. She sits in the doorway of her house on a seat by the high places of the city, calling to those who pass by, who are making their path straight, soliciting those otherwise who are pursuing righteousness under God's direct will to come and have some fun. 15:21. Folly is joy to him who lacks sense, but a man who of understanding walks straight. You know, their conduct or manner of life, following God's directed will, rather than going out and being stupid in life that everybody gets a kick out of. Isn't that cool? Like the jackass people on TV. Isn't that cool? They're exactly what he's talking about here. People like that. Folly is joy to him who lacks sense. Well, it feels good to get hurt. Well, good. Beat on him some more then. Make it count. Give us our money's worth. Matthew 3:3. Regards to John the Baptist, for this is the one referred to by Isaiah the prophet, saying, a voice of one crying in the wilderness, Make ready the way of the Lord. Make his path straight. And that looks at emulating Jesus Christ under the maturity adjustment, experientially. Then compare Psalm 107:7 to that. Led them also by a straight way to go to an inhabited city. So the adjective right way means straight way, and it's a common idiom to indicate sound wisdom of life that abides by it. Seven, in our verse here, it is compared to the way of the truth. The way of the truth. Straight way of the truth are synonymous. 2 Peter 2:2. Because of them, the way of the truth will be maligned, these false teachers. So the straight way is the antithesis to unrighteousness, that which Balaam loves the compensation for. At the end of the verse, it's an antithesis to the unrighteousness of you who love the wages of unrighteousness. So 9, hinting back to the dumb animal metaphor, back in verse 12, the unreasoning animals, these false teachers have gone astray. Planal is a verb, and it's used, as we saw back in 1 Peter 2:25, with respect to sheep. The same verb. In regards to Gentiles, you were continually straying like sheep, but now you've returned to the shepherd and guardian of your souls, looking at their previous history of rebellion and rejection of God's plan. So, heading back to the dumb animal metaphor, these false teachers have gone astray. 10, it indicates their complete spiritual disorientation and failure to embrace the truth of Bible doctrine in spite of his presence. Just because one is associated even directly with the truth does not guarantee that that is their own goal and thought and action and way of living in their own lives. And here, these false teachers, in spite of their association with believers otherwise, they remain completely and totally spiritually disoriented. And they refuse, under negative volition, to embrace Bible doctrine in spite of the witness of the life about around them in this regard. 11, certainly these are the first century, the false teachers, that intimated a closeness of religious and social camaraderie in the lives of Christians were exposed to the righteousness of God. Hard-pressed to think that these false teachers, who would just, you know, become like part of our local assembly, come in and become a part of us in this respect, in a parallel in this regard, and especially with the accolades that Peter has placed upon these churches and these believers at this time in history of being adjusted, didn't hear the truth. That's ridiculous to think otherwise. Obviously, the witness of the life of those around them places culpability before these individuals in regards to hearing the truth and what it truly is in that respect. So 12, an illuminating example of the kind of recalcitrant or stubbornness, negative volition we are dealing with, is found in Acts 13:10, where Paul rebukes Elymas, that he accuses of, quote, not ceasing to make crooked the straight ways of the Lord. In this particular example, we see the type of negative volition, essentially, that's being pictured by these false teachers. A close parallel, if not almost exact. And in Acts 13:10, in that particular section. Paul is seeking to witness here. He's under the filling of God the Holy Spirit in verse 9. And witness involves Gentiles around him, those of high rank here, proconsul, verse 12. Then the proconsul believed when he saw what had happened, be amazed at the teaching of the Lord. Section here. Verse 9. But Saul, who is also known as Paul, filled with the Holy Spirit, fixed his gaze upon him. Okay, let me back up here. Now, Linus, he's involved in this thing, proconsul Sergius Paulus, verse 7. I didn't go back for a minute. Paul witnesses to the proconsul. And verse 7, who is with the proconsul Sergius Paulus, a man of intelligence? This man summoned Barnabas and Saul and sought to hear the word of the Lord. But Elymas, he interferes. The magician, for thus his name is translated, was opposing them, seeking to turn the proconsul away from the faith. Saul, who is also known as Paul, filled with the Holy Spirit, fixed his gaze upon him. This is Elymas. And said, you are full of all deceit and fraud, you son of the devil, you enemy of all righteousness, you will not cease to make crooked the straight ways of the Lord. And now, behold, the hand of the Lord is upon you, and you will be blind and not see the sun for a time. And immediately a mist and darkness fell upon him, and went about seeking those who would lead him by the hand. And then the proconsul, this was sufficient for him to come to saving faith, lead when he saw what had happened, be amazed at the teaching of the Lord. But here you have this individual who is directly seeking to interfere in regards to the gospel presentation given to another individual. And that obviously takes negative volition and puts it at a different level from someone who otherwise just simply has no interest in the truth. It goes on, you know, maybe does a little name calling, whatever, but this guy directly interferes. This is exactly what these false teachers are trying to do. They're trying to interfere and upset the truth of Bible doctrine with respect to Christians, believers, new converts, unstable souls, however they may be categorized here by Peter, with respect to the church. So that example there in Acts 13 gives us the kind of stubbornness and stiff-necked negative volition that characterizes these false teachers that Peter is dealing with. So 13, in spite of clearly hearing the truth, certain negative types not only repudiate it, but seek to enforce their brand of error otherwise, in quote, suppressing the truth in unrighteousness. Romans 1:18 that declares that is an instant of which God's wrath is continually being revealed. They are, people of this ilk, are constantly in God's sights of judgment and to eventually do them in if they don't pull their horns in. And you have people like that, believers as well as unbelievers. People that just got a medal, they got to get in, they got to enforce their own brand of heresy, in spite of the fact that, you know, they don't really have authority to begin with, like these false teachers. And the truth is being taught otherwise. And by all indication, and by what we see in regards to Jesus' reaction to these types, as well as Peter and Jude, we are not to give these people an inch in regards to otherwise trying to infiltrate and upset the truth of Bible doctrine within, obviously, our own jurisdiction, within our own assembly in this regard. Again, it's one thing to repudiate Bible doctrine, go on your merry way, live the life you want to live. It's a whole other thing. Turn around and try to, you know, stick the fork in others in regards to your own brand of retaliation, in retaliation
regards to the truth. So 14, there is an exceptional culpability, making them prime targets for God's wrath. Someone who would come here, hear the truth for a while, become, you know, pretty culpable to it, recognizing what we stand for, what we adhere to in regards to the faith, and then turn around and intentionally start, you know, trying to upset the apple cart, and taking the believers and targeting them, trying to dissuade them and to go their own direction. To go their direction, to accept their brand of error. And that is definitely a no-no. You don't want to be in those shoes. Not ultimately, when it comes down to it. So they're exceptionally prime targets. They're in God's sights. So 15, when men reject the truth, they buy into an alternative. Obviously, if one leaves a void in their thinking in regards to the divine viewpoint, the only other alternative of viewpoint is human viewpoint. And Romans 1:25, again, in that particular section dealing with God consciousness, brings this matter to bear and also to rest. There are two viewpoints one can subscribe to in regards to life. It's either the way God thinks, truth of Bible doctrine, or the way the cosmos thinks in contradiction to it, in contrast to it. And for negative volition, they take the alternative of human viewpoint. For they exchange the truth of God for a lie. Verse 25, Romans 1. Negative volition. And worship and serve the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. I believe it. Hence the importance, again, of Bible doctrine, sound Bible doctrine, its presence, and one's adherence to it, to protect us in regards to all the human viewpoint evil, sponsored by Satan, of the doctrine of demons, as it's also referred to, etc., trying to lead astray others who otherwise might be seeking for the truth, or trying to live their life in the straight, narrow way of Bible doctrine. So if you reject the truth, you take the doctrine, you pick the doctrine, you reject it, then you're going to buy into an alternative. You have to. Where there's a void, where there's a vacuum, it's going to be filled with something. See? And it's our stand that we want to fill our thinking with the mind of Christ. And to think the way God thinks, rather than the way man would otherwise think. Under their STA. 16, the false teachers were exposed to biblical Christianity at some level, and they rejected it, opting to pursue a course of life in contradiction. But again, the problem is they just won't leave. You know, get out of the assembly and go do their thing. No, they got to hang around, and they try to influence people otherwise. 17, there are, no doubt, many examples of individuals that have been exposed to sound Bible doctrine and have not only rejected the call of faith, but actually gone on to sabotage the faith of believers. That's just part of the hazards of the Christian life, that you have people of this ilk. You have negative listen of this ilk. SCA types of this ilk. And those who are otherwise exposed to doctrine, sound doctrine, and they reject it, and then they go on and influence others with their own brand, a false doctrine. 18, these are the worst wolves in sheep's clothing. Jesus warned his disciples about in Matthew 7:15. These are the worst of the worst. They're the best of the best. But they're the best of the worst. And it's amazing how successful they truly are. How many people, doctors, lawyers, people who have otherwise been considered to have high intellect, buy into this crap.
see.
It's the difference between positive and negative volition. Further, there are notable examples of born-again believers that have apostatized as well. To think that it's restricted to just the unbelieving category in this regard is ludicrous, as believers can end up doing and thinking the same way unbelievers do. And Paul warned the churches in this respect in Acts 20, 30. Verse 29, I know that after my departure, as he, if you will, exercises his authority as an apostle in guarding his sheep, that once, you know, the shepherd's away, look out. It's just the way it is. That's the way we're created, spiritually speaking, that believers are in need of particular authorities that God has placed over them to protect them spiritually from others around them that have do not have their best interests at heart. And obviously the apostles dealt with people like this. They had to. But the thing is, obviously he couldn't be everywhere at once. And God's ministry was for him to have a traveling itinerary as an apostle. And he says, I know that after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock. And from among your own selves, men will arise, speaking perverse things, from among those who are already there and basically established in doctrine. But out of that midst, you'll get people that ultimately will go negative and they'll become maladjusted and they'll adhere to the alternative of false doctrine rather than to draw away the disciples after them, to think that they know better. I've seen people like that. People that are so culpable, been under doctrine for 25, 30 years, sound teaching, and they think they know more than the pastor, and they go off and they try to start their own deal, and they go in and they try to get sheep to follow them out of the church. Well, if you're that good, you don't need any followers out of that church. Go out there and start your own damn church. See, that's what I look at. If you're that smart, if you got that much more truth, why are you worried about trying to take people with you? But it's the arrogance of people. And those types love to take issue in regards to authority, the exercise of authority of the pastor otherwise, because a pastor, an adjusted pastor teaches with authority. A just pastor doesn't put up with bullshit. See, in regards to the spiritual protection in regards to his sheep and the truth of Bible doctrine. And people that advocate it, that otherwise try and influence people. Well, obviously, you know, we all have to, people will have their moments. We understand that. We're not dealing with that. We're dealing with people that come in and try to turn you away. God has given this local church, and for the time being at least, me to protect you otherwise. Don't let go. I don't care what else comes into your face. Don't let go. We're in the boat together, see. And as long as I remain adjusted, I'll continue to do my best to bring these things, these issues to bear and deal with them as appropriate and as I need to. Fortunately, we've been light in regards to any kind of testing in that area so far. But, you know, sign of the cross, you never know what God will bring down the pipe. You got to be ready for anything in this world. Truly, you do not know what tomorrow will bring. Peter again pulls in another Old Testament example here as another insight into the FCA grid of these times, having followed the way of Balaam, the son of Beor. All right, now 21, the events of Balaam dominate numbers 22 through 24. Whereas Balaam, he is an Old Testament Gentile prophet and a believer. And we'll get into the particular chapters when we get into the next verse. But to summarize for you in this regard, Balaam was a Gentile, but he had a gift of prophecy. And he was a believer. And he exercised it, and at a certain point in his life, he was adjusted. And he was a very accurate prophet in this regard. And the situation came up, and it was just during the time where Israel was going in, and they were starting to kick people out of the land according to God's directive, and to assume real estate for themselves, for their own land. And a certain king, Balak, king of Moab, got under real fear, because they saw that nobody could stop these people. God was with them. See, they had their God. Their God was with them. Their God was superior. And so Balak seeks to hire Balaam to come in and put a curse on Israel so that he would be protected and be able to defeat them militarily. And he recognized Balaam's reputation as an accurate prophet. And he recognized the fact that, well, Balaam deals with the same God. So he's putting two and two together, and I'll get Balaam, and he offers him wealth. And basically, it comes down to whatever you want, you name your price. And Balaam succumbed to FCA greed and sought to then fulfill what was necessary for Balak so that he could get paid. So he could make some money off the ministry. He finally had enough. He'd been poor long enough.
Yeah.
And I got a chance to make some money. I'm going to do it. And God jams him the whole way, as we will see. One particular instance that will come out. And Balaam basically had a gift to hire, basically. Have guns, will travel. Remember that old show, that old cowboy show, Western? Have gift, will travel. See? And he went into that mode. And his attempt to become rich in that regard was not lasting for very long. It eventually cost him his life. And it obviously cost him the prize. But his approach then of turning away from the truth, see, depart from the straight way, to then go after the lust trend of his monetary grid, of his STA, became his Achilles heel spiritually for him. So 23, that summarizes the situation enough at this point in time. So 23, now one might ask, why are unbelieving false teachers compared to Balaam, who was a believer? And that's 24, this is because of the greed that characterizes both in comparison. And I think it's even more intentional that Peter's saying, hey, just because you're a believer, don't think that you're out of it, that your people are immune to this, because they're believers. As I brought out in the beginning of this thing, he's emphasizing unbelievers because they represent the epitome of how low men will go under the STA. And then you can take it from there. See? So it's the principle of greed, their monetary propensity, that characterizes both of them, is why he's brought in here as the example. 25, Balaam, who loved the wages of unrighteousness, are emulated by these heretics. So 26, for Balaam, the wages of unrighteousness, again, was money. Is money. Deuteronomy 23:4. Because they did not meet you with food and water on the way when you came out of Egypt, because they hired against you Balaam the son of Beor from the Thor of Mesopotamia to curse you, to hire him, see, for the money. So 27, this highlights the false teacher's number one STA pursuit in life. Putting together all that Peter has related to us with respect to these particular types of false teachers, these individuals. He made it clear in verse 3a that it is greed. It is greed that drives them. And that greed is a monetary greed, as we brought out. So 28, while the greed of the false teachers includes sex, their STA recognizes that money provides maximum opportunity to exploit their failing trends. the SCA Smart Brain Computer. See? And in this regards, as we know, they've trained their STAs very well by exposing it and indulging it in regard to all of its activities. And they educate it. And in regards to the STA's education, it recognizes that in order to thoroughly enjoy my sexual trends, I need money to thoroughly exploit it and indulge myself. 1 Timothy 6:10 brings out the fact that money is a root of all sorts of evil. And that recognizes the principle that money is that which empowers and gives people the freedom to be indulgent, to be hedonistic, etc., to do things that, you know, otherwise most people would not be able to do to that degree without money. For the love of money is a root. And understand, it's a root. It's not the root. This verse is constantly misquoted by people. Money is the root of all evil. No, it's not the root. The root is your damn negative volition. Your STA, see? No, it's a root. It's a source. It's an avenue. And it's a dominant avenue in regards to people. It's a root of all sorts of evil, from which some, by longing for it, in an unhealthy way, have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many a sorrow. So, the number one love of the false teachers is money. The more money they have, the more they can indulge their phallic fantasies, their eyes of adulteresses. So 29, to pursue their SCA gratifications, they use the ministry to empower them monetarily. Yes, it's true that people get into the ministry, unbelievers as well as maladjusted believers, get in the ministry for the profit. They look and they see, oh, there's a profit to be made there. And there are profiteers, people who will take advantage of any situation to make money. You run across those kind of people with that kind of drive, personally, I'd be wary of being around them, because you never know what they might do to you to make an extra buck. See? But people get involved in the ministry for money, and you see it, these big, huge super churches. Why it's so important to build up your numbers and get people in so more money comes in. The bigger church you got, the better it looks to others, and everybody else will flock in based on their religious human viewpoint, reasoning in regards to, you know, what constitutes Christianity, etc. Well, money has its place, and it's obviously necessary, but an unhealthy approach to it places it at a level that becomes more important than God, the truth of Bible doctrine, and pursuit of righteousness otherwise. So to pursue their STA gratifications, they use a ministry to empower them monetarily. On TV, the whole works, all these idiots out there. They're nothing but profiteers. And they use the Christian banner to try to get people mystically wrapped up and emotionally wrapped up in it so that they'll get. 30. Balaam was a true prophet of God that went astray because he allowed his STA lust grid to subvert his love for God. 31. The false teachers here allow their love, our verb agapao, for money to sustain their seditious attitude toward the truth, retaining it, perpetuating it as their God alive. They got into it for the money, and they sustained it in regards to their own drive and motivation of why they want to be in this this whole church scene to begin with. So 32, in both cases, Balaam and the libertines prostitute their office for sordid gain. And that's exactly what Peter warned the adjusted pastor not to ever get involved in. As a shepherd, not to be in it for sort of gain. 1 Peter 5:2. 33, the agapao verb for love looks to the attribute or attributes, the one expressing the love, as we know this term. So 34, the singular of the phrase. This phrase is singular here. Translated literally, the wage of unrighteousness. Translated wages is literally in the Greek, the wage, singular, of unrighteousness. Looks to the STA monetary greed of Balaam, shadowed by the false teachers as their first love. 35, the readings for the name of Balaam's father vary. This is as a point of interest. As we see in our verse in the Greek, Basor. And then in the Hebrew, we see Beor, as well as Beor in the Septuagint in the Greek, as I spelled out for you in Numbers 22:5. So there's been a couple suggestions on here. One of them was Peter kind of had a, you know, twang to his talk from his background. His accent, you know, was a little different. Maybe he was showing that. The one that makes most sense to me is the one I've got down here. 36, it has been suggested that the sore may be a paranomasia, which is a play on words of pun. Nomia means name, para alongside, a name alongside, a parallel name. So a play on words, a pun, with the Hebrew term basar, which means flesh. Flesh, see? And as such, an allusion to the SCA activity that cost Balaam his life and reputation. 37, the parallel of Jude 11 further supports the main idea here that's being brought out. Monetary reversionism as the primary thought ascribed to the false teachers. Jude 11, woe to them, for they have gone the way of Cain, and for pay they have rushed headlong into the error of Balaam. See? For pay. This is why the false teachers are in it. 38, Balaam is otherwise only mentioned elsewhere in the New Testament in Revelation 2:14, corresponding to the era of the church in which we see the rise of Catholicism under Constantine. That's the only other time that Balaam's name is mentioned in the New Testament, apart from Peter and Jude. And there is, in the message to Pergamum, we've looked at this briefly once before, and the Christ bringing accusation and things that he has against them. And that's verse 14, I have a few things against you because you have some there who hold the teaching of Balaam, who kept teaching Balak to put a stumbling block for sons of Israel, etc. So 39, this collaborates with our initial assessment in verse 1 of chapter 2, that by this time in church history, these false teachers were starting to dominate the landscape. They've had enough influence that Jesus Christ hold demeanor to them in Revelation and the message given to them. You're in a world of hurt. You need to do something. You're on a crash and burn path here in this respect. That's around 313 to 590 AD. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God the Holy Spirit continue to light us to see things in Jesus' name. Amen.